Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Dan Ayburn. Dan, how you doing?
A little tired today, Terry. We just got done with the face-off yearbook this week, so I think everybody's kind of hitting the burners a little bit.
But I can see it in your eyes.
We spent the past two weekends kind of like, I wouldn't say on the road, but definitely at events.
On the fields.
On the fields, on the very muddy fields.
Well, not only that, but also it was so cold on Saturday that it was like when you're out in the cold, it just saps so much of your energy. It's amazing how quickly you're like, oh my God. I just got to get into a hot shower or something like that.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I couldn't be more excited to just go home, post up on my couch, and watch football. It was glorious.
And then the 6:45 to 7:15 window was pretty good, but then the 8 o'clock games were all blowouts.
Yep,
very disappointing. That being said, we are not here to talk about college football. Although the U is back, right?
The U is definitely back.
All the way back.
All the way back.
They're not all the way back. They're going to lose to Clemson or something like that. The U in the college football playoff is not going to happen. But another thing that is all the way back and now it's gone again is the National Letter of Intent signing week. How do you like that?
It was
pretty solid segue.
Pretty solid transition there.
So we had, well, I guess I want your opinion on how wild it was. Last week we had Ty Zanders on because he and I disputed over how much activity there was going to be. He texted me this morning to say that I was right, that it was more activity than he expected in terms of surprises during signing week. What was your takeaway?
I would just reaffirm that statement entirely. I think we kind of got shielded by being at the event over the weekend from all that was happening. But Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all this news kind of seemed to flood it in. And I don't think we took it in as stride as much as we probably could have. But I kind of just analyzing it today before we did this podcast, I was like, man, so much stuff really did happen over the past week. I mean, I think we're about to get to this point, but I think it was really just two characters in particular that really revved up the heat late in the recruiting period, and that's Navy and Notre Dame.
So for me, the thing about signing period that's so interesting is we know who signs, at least with respect to the high schools and club teams tweeting out photos of their signing ceremony,
mm-hmm.
which certainly suggests that that player signed, or the college programs that tweet out that they've received the letter of intent. But we don't know who doesn't sign. There's no ceremony. It reminds me of Keith Wilford of the Wilford movement. You know, he one of his lines is everybody tweets I'm committed. Nobody tweets I'm going home in 140 characters. I feel the same way about signing your NLI. I mean, we don't have an exhaustive list of who didn't sign. So, you know, it's kind of like, unless you hear anecdotally, this guy didn't sign or this guy's still looking around or this guy got dropped or whatever, you don't know. It's probably, you probably assume that he did sign. And so, you know, that news is actually still going to trickle out, I think, over the course of the next couple months. But to your point, yeah, I mean, there was some movement. What do you find to be most newsworthy over the course of last week?
Well, like I just said, I think Navy, Notre Dame, they kind of went with the explicit policy of we're going to flip kids. We're going to go after the kids we think are the best right now, not the best we saw maybe 2-3 years ago. You know, I think Navy was able to flip 8 total players within, I think, a span of 7 days. That means you're averaging more than one kid flipping per day. That's pretty crazy. So Ryan Melder putting in the extra hours, it seems.
And 5 of those were previously committed to the Air Force Academy. Not all of them were members of the class of 2018, but several of them were. And, you know, it obviously suggests that there's some uncertainty and concern surrounding what's going on at the Air Force Academy.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the things we were talking about with the face-off yearbook is like, we really don't know their status just yet, and we can't really find that out because it's an ongoing investigation. So there's definitely a lot of variables at play right there.
So included in that, most recently, a 2018 attackman, Brian Calabrese, Wilton High School in Connecticut, member of Primetime, very familiar to the Inside Lacrosse folks. He is an 82 in our recruiting database. His brother, a 2019 goalie, Andrew Calabrese, same school, same club's affiliation, an 80. Both of them flipping from the Air Force Falcons to the Navy midshipmen. And as you say, they were the seventh and eighth over the course of the last week to do so. And I think, you know, we obliquely referred to this last week on the podcast, but I think it's pretty clear now, you know, this was a direct reaction to the news surrounding Justin Shockey.
Absolutely. I was saying to myself, like, what a recovery. I feel like just from an optic standpoint, losing Justin Shockey was such a blow. But then Navy comes back and hits us with all these flips. It's saying, hey, we're not going to, you know, take this lying down. We're going to go out and be aggressive in the recruiting field and try to bounce back from this. I thought that was really good from a perspective standpoint.
And you mentioned Notre Dame. They come down with, you know, it was interesting, and not a lot of people realized, is that during signing week, that weekend, or week leading up to it, is a dead period. And so as a result, like, last-minute flips that require visits can't happen. And so then visits get scheduled for the week during signing period, and as a result, Notre Dame, with three announcements since the weekend, I believe, Tate Young, a 2018 midfielder from Westlake High School in Texas, Kevin Lynch, a midi from Chaminade, and Justin Chang, a long stick from Beckman High School in California. Chang was originally committed to Bryant, Lynch to Furman, and Tate Young was originally committed to Penn. Continue to raid Penn's closet, do the Fighting Irish. Any thoughts or reactions to these three players?
My first reaction was one that Notre Dame seems to have the most success poaching from the Ivy League, and we've kind of seen that the Ivy League is actually one of the bigger beneficiaries of the poaching kind of movement, where, you know, kids get better grades and have a more complete academic profile come their junior year, and that's when they can kind of go after the big name Ivy League schools. But what we're seeing with Notre Dame is that they also have a great academic profile, and they can say, hey, like, you can kind of get the same quality, well, maybe not the same quality of education, but a very high quality education, and also be on a team that's competing for a national championship every single year.
On top of that, there was a little bit of movement in the 2018 class, and as well as some late commits. I think Nick Rowlett, the faceoff specialist who was originally committed to Lafayette, then switched to Maryland, decommitted from Maryland in the wake of Shockey's commitment. We learned over the, I believe on Monday, that he had committed to Michigan.
Yeah, he had signed with Michigan, signed, sealed, delivered, and all that. And I was actually wondering if Navy was going to pursue him in the wake of the Justin Shockey saying, hey, maybe we can trade players here, so to speak. But, you know, I think that's a, I just thought this was a huge pickup for Michigan. Is there maybe a little bit of a revenge optics to this? Maybe, I don't know, like he's saying, oh, I'm going to go not only to a Big Ten rival, but a Big Ten rival that just hired a Maryland assistant. So there may be some interesting things at play there. But this was a huge pickup for Michigan. I think they're one of the teams in the Big Ten that kind of has not kept up to par with the level of play that the faceoff men in the Big Ten are competing at. So I think this could be something to watch in the coming years. Can this guy compete with the big guys going to Ohio State, big guys going to Maryland and Penn State?
And then just, you know, kind of final summary thoughts on signing week. You know, we talked last week about what these graphics, videos, GIFs, everything else to kind of support the hype around players signing their letter of intent. Any final thoughts, any comments as to who made an impression on you?
Well, obviously there's a few programs that really did a good job. Ohio State, I believe Penn State, Mercer, Michigan, all kind of did some very advanced kind of graphics, whether it was kind of like just a GIF, a video, or even just kind of just a still image of a player saying, hey, I've signed my NLI. I thought that was really cool. You know, that speaks to the sophistication and the footballization of the sport, where it's headed. You know, I know one thing I was looking in recently was that wrestlers even do this. They make their own graphics, like, oh, I'm committed to North Carolina, and they have this amazing graphic with the NC and the blue, and basically have, you know, photoshopped themselves into the uniform. I said, maybe lacrosse isn't there just yet, but, you know, in 5 years' time, there's going to be 17-year-olds who are proficient in Photoshop and can do that.
It's pretty wild. Last one I want to get to, for the committed players who do not sign NLIs, whether it's because they're going to a service academy or a Ivy League school or a a D3 school where they're not receiving academic aid, there was a debate, and there's always a debate about whether or not they should have a signing ceremony. What's your take?
It's funny. I feel like this is one of the things that people get so hyped up about and so passionate about that I just don't really have a take here. I feel like, you know, if you want to do it to make yourself feel better, you know, go ahead. I think the one thing that kind of makes me upset in this sense is that there's, you know, people who, you know, kids who are signing their NLIs, their parents will say, hey, my son is committed to play Division I. I don't want the Division III players here at the table with them. I feel like that's just not cool. That's just not cool, in my opinion. I feel like if you want to celebrate the athlete, then, you know, have all the kids who are going to play college do kind of like the faux ceremony, have them sign their NLI. I'm okay with that, but don't try to bring other people down. I'm not cool with that.
I've been to a few of these ceremonies, and I think one of the best criticisms of fake signings is that it is too laudatory. It's self-congratulatory for the club, the high school, or the parents. I see it, but on the other hand, I think those three entities typically deserve a lot of credit for the student athlete's success, for the player's success at ending up where he is. And to your point, I think that it's a ceremony and it's a celebration, and I just have a hard time getting worked up about the circumstances surrounding a ceremony or a celebration. It's kind of like, you know, I agree with you that my enjoyment of my experience or my celebration of my accomplishment should have no bearing on you and yours, just because you don't view it as equal because of my going to the Division I, yeah, or my going D3 and you're going D1. You know, the idea that means that I'm some sort of like, I'm a class below you, I'm a division below you, and I don't deserve to sit at the same table as you as we, you know, sign these sheets of paper, or you sign a real sheet of paper and I sign a fake one. Like, I don't know, man. It's a weird world out there.
I feel like the whole ceremony has really evolved from, you know, signing the NLI to just saying, hey, these are the kids who are going to be achieving athletic and academic success at the next level. Because what I saw in particular this time around was the boys' Latin picture and particular, because my cousin was in it, you know, they kind of just wore the sweatshirts and the hats of where they were going, and there was no papers on the table. They're just saying, hey, these are the kids who have achieved something. This is something to celebrate. I think that's where the sport should move.
And then other thing that I think is interesting are the high schools that have, first of all, boys and girls playing sports, taking part in a ceremony of all the athletes that are playing college sports, you know, not just of one sport, in this case, obviously, lacrosse. It was interesting. It's fun to watch. I mean, it's also interesting because, like, I think when you see that photo, it gives you a little bit of a peek into, well, not only, I mean, if you don't know what the kid looks like, what the kid looks like, and then also, you know, some of the other circumstances and vibes surrounding, you know, that player. Did he sign it at home at his kitchen table? Did he, you know, sign it in this, you know, beautiful walnut lined library in, you know, some prestigious prep school or whatever? Was it in a gymnasium of a public high school? Like, those are the types of dynamics that I think are, you know, just fascinating to see and kind of attach to your image of a specific player.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
All right, well, Dan, let's transition into talking about the fall ILRI. You mentioned we are coming off of session 2. It basically meant Saturday, Sunday, about 7:30 until about 5 p.m. We were on the sidelines and we were watching club lacrosse. There's a lot to dive into here. We have, I think, coming up on 120 evaluations in the Inside Lacrosse recruiting database from session 1 and session 2. So make sure you check those out. We also have all tournament teams from the 2018, 19, 20, and 21 divisions. And there's a lot more content, videos, photos, highlights, all that sort of good stuff coming down the pipeline. So make sure you check out insidelacrosse.com/recruiting for all that content. Got a couple of things we're going to specifically talk about, but we're really going to meander. So first things first, what were you watching over the course of the last 2 weekends?
My primary focus was the 2019 division, because I kind of want to, you know, that's the upcoming junior class. That's where I want to kind of focus my just focus my focus, because I want to be able to, come springtime, come summertime, be able to draft a top 100 list of 2019s.
And I was taking on the 2021s. It's an interesting dynamic. I think, you know, I volunteered for that spot. I watched a lot of 21s over the summertime, so I felt calibrated as to, you know, what those players' peers are like.
Yeah.
I also, you know, having been to the World Series of Youth Lacrosse, you know, have been focused, I think, more so on the younger players rather than you, Jeff, Matt Kinnear, Kyle Devitt, who were watching the sophomores, juniors, and seniors. You know, that said, I bounced around. There weren't as many 21 teams as there were from the other class years, so that meant there were some holes in the schedule, and I was able to check some things out. Let's start by talking players, which, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of players, but who is the player that impressed you the most?
Well, this kid comes to a lot of our events because Amped is a regular fixture at our events, and he always impresses me, and his name is Andrew Cook. He's from Atlee, Virginia, and he's a Richmond commit. He was a leading scorer on this Amped team with 10 points off 8 goals and 2 assists, and he's just one of those players that, like, you clearly watched the game and said, this kid is a Division I caliber player, and he was just awesome. Like, he's a great athlete, can play both ways, and he loves that low-to-high rip, so you know he's going to make a few heads turn with that.
For me, it's Camden Hay. He's a 2020, plays for the Sweet Lacs upstate team. He's heading to Syracuse. He's so impressive. I mean, he's tall. I want to say he probably is about 6'3". I think, you know, if I were going to ballpark his weight, I think he's about 215. He's righty, and he just can absorb so much contact. And the thing about him that impresses me the most is he doesn't need a power cradle. He can put his, you know, he can one-handed cradle with his right hand on the bottom of his stick, or his, mm-hmm. I mean, really, he can kind of do this two-handed and continue to keep the ball moving such that, you know, it's in a prime passing position once he gets two hands back on the stick and protect his stick by keeping it farther away from his body. And for someone who is so big and has so much reach, that's really valuable because my standard for this is Kevin Crowley, and I think it's because he was a midfielder as opposed to an attackman. And mm-hmm. Kevin Crowley's ability to, like, get into the middle of the defense, be in a scoring position, and still be able to absorb defenders and keep his head up, you know, it's akin to a Tom Brady-esque skill of sustaining a lot of pressure and keeping your eyes downfield. And to watch Cam Hay do this was so impressive to me. Like I said, for a variety of reasons, he was able to make all types of plays happen, whether it be whether he was able to shoot or feed out of that. And for me, you know, just one of the most impressive players I've seen in a long time, and certainly the most impressive player that I took away from this past weekend. I think that is separate from the question of, was there a guy that stood out to you that's uncommitted that you feel like, wow, that's not going to be the case for very long? So, you know, a guy who you feel is, and for me, I was looking at this from the perspective of 19s, you know, a guy that you say to yourself, he strikes me as a Division I player. I'm surprised that he isn't already.
This one kid actually in particular that really stood out, his name is Logan Cleefish. He plays for the Pennsylvania Rough Riders. He led this team in points over the weekend with 7 goals. And the player that he actually reminded me the most of is Ben Reeves. And that's very, very high praise. But I kind of draw that comparison simply because he's obviously a big body dodger. But when he's driving to the cage, there's no need for fanciness. He just gets it in the goal. And that reminded me of Ben Reeves so much, where he'll kind of just post up at 5-5 maybe, either do a little rocker step and then just bounce the ball into the goal. You know, it's as simple as that. And I felt like this kid, he could do the flashy things, but he just kind of made the fundamental play that they really needed at the moment. Like I said, really good dodger, really good size. I could definitely see this kid, you know, kind of as a sneaky pickup for a mid-major kind of lacrosse program.
I'm going to stick with that same team and say something relatively similar. The guy who stood out to me was a defenseman named Jackson Powers. He goes to Malvern. He played for that PA Rough Riders team. And the thing I liked about him the most is that he was like 5'9", 5'10". He wasn't a towering defenseman. And when you're a guy who can make an impression like he did on me with that frame, it speaks, in my opinion, to a lot of other aspects of the, I don't know, like a lot of other aspects of your game. The first thing that jumped out to me was that he played tough. He played mean. It was clear that if he was guarding you, it was going to be a tough day. And the other thing that really stood out to me was, and this is going to sound weird, I think, but I love defenders who are able to keep their posture, particularly if you... I don't like guys that rely too much on a V-hold. If you are defending your man with your normal cross-check position and you're not overextending but you're still moving him because of the strength in your arms, particularly if you are that height and particularly if you're guarding someone fast like he was, in this case, it was, I mean... And for the type of player we're talking about, I think it was important. The game I watched him, he was guarding Steven Bickel, who is a Bellarmine commit, and they were playing in the mud, you know, and Bickel was playing for Next Level. He goes to St. Andrews in Maryland, and, you know, I just want to mention this, that, like, Bickel kind of reminded me in some ways of Steven Rafis in the sense that, you know, he was pretty skinny. I think he was fast first. That was kind of his, you know, main skill. And so, you know, to watch Powers match up with him really made a strong impression. And I was, again, I really liked his ability to, you know, move the guy he was guarding in the direction he wanted to without compromising his, basically his center of gravity and without overstepping. Particularly in the mud, when you have to react and you can't overstep and you have to be conservative with your footwork, you know, I thought he did a really nice job of keeping up with a fast attackman. One guy I want to ask specifically about, because I know you got eyes on him a few times, and I think he was, you know, one of the more interesting players at the event, is a 2019 midfielder from Crespi Carmelite High School in California, plays for the LA Heat, and he is committed to Maryland, Logan Solberg. What did you take away from Logan Solberg's game, having the opportunity to see him play in person?
The first thing that stands out is easily athleticism. He's a big kid, I believe 6'1 or 6'2, can definitely get separation off the dodge, you know, off the sweep. Didn't really play attack, mostly a kind of a downhill or sweeping kind of dodger. And then he took a lot of shots, I'll say that. He's definitely a volume shooter, but when he does connect, he does have a cannon, and he can really pick those corners if he really gets his hands free and really gets a good look. You know, it kind of just speaks to the profile that Maryland is getting, where they're getting the best athletes from all over the place and guys who are just really competent. I feel like this is a kid who has all the physical tools. His skill may be a little bit raw, but I feel like if he really works at it, he could be a really quality player.
So anybody else in the class of 2019 stood out to you that you feel like deserves mention?
Amt always brings a lot of great players, and I think they always work together well as a team. I feel like every time they come to one of our events, they always win it, because it's a lot of kids from, you know, similar areas and a lot of, you know, high school teammates. Davis Gillenwater also had a great tournament along with Andrew Cook. He had 6 goals, 1 assist. Conlon Looney, Wyatt Hamilton, all these guys are really just, you know, kind of fit the same profile where they're, you know, they're not overly small, but they're not overly big. They're kind of very prototypical size for maybe an attackman, all very quick, and all have, you know, really decent skill. I feel like Amp is really just pumping out some really quality players. So I hope they keep coming to our events.
That actually brings up a good point. I wanted to shout out a program that made a couple programs that made a strong impression on me this past weekend and over the course of the previous 2 weekends. The first is Bucktown, which is a Carolina-based club. It was the first time I'd kind of seen them up close. And they make a strong impression because their uniforms are all white. And so, particularly when you're playing on mud, that stands out.
Yeah.
They looked very, very fresh. They were chock full of tall, lanky defensemen, which seems to be, you know, what you get out of North Carolina, because that's the similar way that I would characterize the Charlotte All-Stars and Team 24/7 as well, you know, Ryan Flanagan's club. So Joe Sanoski, I think they've done a really nice job cultivating particularly long and athletic defensemen for that Bucktown club. Another squad, you know, we had two of the emerging clubs, I would call them, in the D.C., Northern Virginia area over the course of the past 2 weeks. we in session one, it was top caliber. In session two, it was next level. I was really impressed by some of the talent on the next level squads. And then you mentioned Rough Riders. Maryland Rough Riders was at session two Sunday. PA Rough Riders was there both days. I was really impressed with the talent they brought across all the grad years as well. Not to mention, obviously, Sweet Lex, both the Florida squad and the Upstate squad. Upstate was there on Saturday. And then, for me, a special treat was watching the Tenacious Turtles 2020 team. Did you get a chance to see them play?
I did not. I'm actually pretty disappointed I didn't.
Well, you're going to have to find a way to get some eyes on their video. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to see a ton. I saw about a half. And one guy that really stood out to me was an attackman named Caleb Zuhoski. He attends Riverhead High School on Long Island, and I rated him an 82, and I just, he's an interesting player for sure, and there's a lot. First of all, I mean, he's, I think, 5'7", and that is, you know, one of his distinguishing characteristics, because certainly when, you know, when you're either, you know, tall for your position or short for your position, it's one of the things that, you know, is going to indicate or dictate the type of way you play. Mm-hmm. There are two aspects of his game that stood out to me the most. The first is incredibly quick first step. The second is incredibly two-handed. Didn't see him do a lot with his right hand that he couldn't do with his left and vice versa. I just think he's, you know, one of those types of prototypical ex-QB attackman that is really sought after. I was shocked by how frequently he made unselfish plays that in the moment felt like the wrong play because they were giving up what appeared to be a pretty good opportunity, and instead made one more pass that turned into a actual one more pass that ended up in an easier look. And I thought that, you know, I saw that happen either two or three times in the span of a half, and I was like, whoa, you know, that's a level of consistency and frequency with that type of move that you don't see very often. Did you get an opportunity to watch much else in the class of 2020 and anybody else that stood out to you?
I watched maybe a half of the 2020 Sweet Lex Upstate team, and I was kind of just blown away by the talent level on that squad. I felt like watching them, I was like, this team, like, if we put, like, you know, the winners of every division in, like, a round-robin kind of tournament, they might actually win the whole thing. Joey Pezzamenti, Ohio State commit, I remember seeing him, you know, snipe a few corners. The Hay kid, as you mentioned, also very excellent. Just, you know, just so much quality coming from Upstate. And I feel like those guys routinely get under-recognized because of their location. You know, I feel like it's not as easy for them to get recognition as maybe a Maryland or a Long Island squad simply because of how far away they are.
Yeah, that was a team that featured an attack line of Ohio State. You mentioned Pezzamenti, Hay heading to Syracuse, and I believe Casey McDermott, who's heading to Hopkins as well. All right, Dan, well, I don't want to spend too much time talking about the 2021s. Obviously, they're freshmen. They're just getting their feet wet relative to you know, their experience on the recruiting landscape. A couple of guys that stood out to me. I mentioned Next Level earlier, and they had an attackman in William O'Brien, who I thought is the type of player to keep an eye on. He plays for St. Albans, and he's, again, just two-handed, fast, knows how to make plays. I definitely think he's the type of player who's going to end up turning some heads over the course of the, you know, coming years. On top of that, one of the easiest things to find at this session two in the 2021 class were big, and by big for freshmen, I'm referring to 6'1", 180 pounds. Two-handed, do-it-all midfielders. It seemed like everywhere I turned, there were a couple. One that stood out was John Miller, who was playing with the Maryland Rough Riders, a Loyola Blakefield alum. You know, he scored, just knew how to get to the goal. Another one was Brian Kramer, plays for the Jersey Thunder, attends Ramsey High School. And then a third was Eric Kolar, who was playing with Lax Factory and attends Urbana. Kramer and Kolar are both, I think, twins. They certainly, I mean, they at least had a brother on the team. And I thought that was kind of interesting as well. And then you mentioned Amped frequently producing these types of players. A guy who didn't get in the score sheet a lot, but I was really impressed by, and we've seen a couple times, is Tyler Conklin, who a midfielder slash attackman who plays at Episcopal High School in Southern Virginia, and as I mentioned, played for Amps as well. You know, those four guys, just big, do-it-all, two-handed type of midfielders, you know, the types of players that are in demand, heavy demand at the next level.
One question I want to pose to you is, do you think that was just a particularly good crop of two-way players, or do you think that kind of speaks to the way that the college game is going, so therefore high school and club coaches are trying to condition their players to what might be coming in the coming years?
I think that's a question. The answer for why I think that those guys emerge right now is because I think that's typically the case for this age group.
Okay.
Because the bigger players, the best athletes, tend to just do everything on the field. So I think that, and they stand out. They particularly stand out at this age group when, you know, there are guys on the field who are 5'3", 5'4", 5'5", because they haven't gone through their growth spurt yet. And so, you know, I think that that's the primary reason for why those types of players emerge and stand out at this level. But I think that whether or not they maintain that style of play going forward is really fascinating. And that will be what dictates or, you know, the signifier of what's to come with respect to how much the college game and the impending, the possibility of a shot clock and everything else, how much that trickles down to the high school and club ranks.
Interesting. Interesting.
All right, Dan, you've got anything else you want to talk about with respect to the NLI signing period or fall ILRI session one and session two?
Yeah, there's a few things we should just bring the audience up to date with. One guy we forgot to mention, you know, some news that happened this week was Peyton Cormier, who was actually the first verbal in the 2019 class, signed his letter of intent to play Virginia in the 2018 class. My immediate take with this was the reinforcements are coming. So, like, I feel like, you know, this is a guy that Lars is really high on. If you saw him play in the Naptown Classic this summer, he was an absolute beast. Kind of like somewhere in between a Dylan Malloy and a Chris Cloutier kind of player, where he's huge, he knows how to bulldodge, and he has that tremendous Canadian hands, tremendous Canadian skill set. I definitely feel like with, you know, guys like Mike DeMario graduating this year, they want to get a guy like him on campus as soon as possible.
Yeah, I would infer something similar, which is, you know, Virginia feels like they want to get an influx of talent in. It's interesting to see the dynamics of how these things work out, particularly with respect to scholarship allocation. And that's one of the functions of poaching and decommitments and dropped commitments that will never really make it to the public light. But, you know, you have coaches say to you, oh yeah, he's going to end up there because they just lost this, so they had this money open up. And it's fascinating with respect to, you know, Cormier, who, as you said, the expectation was that he was going to PG and be a member of the class of 2019. His ability to go straight is not only a function of where his grades were, but it was also a function of where Virginia's scholarship availability was, and that's fascinating to see itself play out as well.
Yeah, that's one thing that I feel like people always ask us to, like, oh, can you just be upfront about it? I was like, no, we can't really be upfront about it, but I feel like the timelines are there, you know, on Twitter and stuff like that. And to kind of quote the part of my take, guys, you know, we're not conspiracy guys, but we're connect the dot guys. You can connect the dots. I feel like you can easily see how things can play out, you know, in the realm of recruiting if you really pay attention.
Well, not only that, but the other thing that's impressive or significant about the fact that he's in this class is it's already two people bigger than was originally expected because of Harry Welford and Hall Peters. Originally expected to be members of the 2017 class, now not arriving on campus until they do so with the 2018s.
Absolutely. Very, very interesting. Another thing we should mention is Pat Cavanaugh. You know, Matt Cavanaugh's younger brother, who is a 2018, is going to Notre Dame as well, and he will PG and join the 2019 class. He was a player at Under Armour for Long Island. Really impressed with him. A little bit of a different skill set than his brother, I feel like. So it'll be interesting to see the way he fits into Notre Dame's offense in the future.
All right, Dan. Well, I think that's going to do it for this edition of the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Podcast. Thank you once again for checking it out. You might think that we are going to take Thanksgiving off, but no. We are going to bring you on Black Friday a 2018 class review podcast. Now that the NLIs are in, we're going to start to parse out which groups coming in are going to be the best. We've already spent a lot of time talking about Navy, Notre Dame, a little bit less about Virginia, a little bit less about Brown. Last week, we spent a lot of time talking about Johns Hopkins. So probably going to avoid those at least a little bit. But certainly make sure you check back next Friday for another edition of the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Podcast.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.